This is Buffalo What's Next, where we have conversations with the community about moving forward. To have your voice heard, press the Talk to Us button on the WBFO app, and we'll work to get your questions and comments on the air. Join us on Twitter at WBFO or email us at news@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
Good morning. This is Dave Debo. Coming up tonight at the Meriwether Library at 6 o'clock, there is a meeting to try and figure out how much of the everything, the stories, the history, the things that were left at the top shooting site, how much of that should be saved, how much of that should become part of the history that is preserved by groups like the Buffalo and Erie County Public Library or the Buffalo History Museum. Coming up in a little bit, we will talk about that with the director of the Buffalo History Museum. But first, Jeff Kelly is here from the Investigative Post. He's a reporter there. And Jeff, you have an article here that I think resonates really well with people who are concerned about the shooting. Because even before the shooting, during the summer of protests, during Black Lives Matter, during George Floyd, there were people calling regularly for police reform. And I want to read the first line of your article and then just let you roll from there. Buffalo police just got a raise. The city got nothing, no concessions, no reforms in exchange. Explain. One would think, and I'm sure this is the premise of the article, one would think that with all these people wanting all sorts of police reform at a time when a contract is up and you do that kind of back and forth negotiation, that something would come of it. What went wrong?
Yeah, well, let's roll back to the summer of 2020, Dave, when you know, the streets were filled with protesters, and in the halls of government you had council members also responding to those protesters saying, yes, let's look at the police department, how it works, how we discipline police officers, how we train them. And this is an opportune time, said Darius Pridgeon, the council president, to push for reforms in the police department and police policy, because we are in the midst of a contract negotiation.
And some of the reforms that people wanted probably couldn't happen without a change in the contract.
Exactly. Some things require concessions from the union during contract negotiations. Other things, you know, that summer, Byron Brown instituted some reforms. He sort of reconfirmed the ban on chokeholds. He implemented a policy of appearance tickets for minor infractions and things like that. Things that were meant to sort of de-escalate interactions between the police and the public. But some things require contractual changes. And here they were, protesters in the streets and presumably negotiators at the table. But it turns out that contract negotiations really had been at a stalemate since the contract expired the year before in July 2019. And for the last 3 years, they really have not progressed. And in fact, what has happened is this. Earlier this year, the police union threw up their hands and said, you're not serious about negotiating. You're not coming through with any counteroffers that are meaningful. So we're going to arbitration. And in arbitration, the only thing that is considered is wages and benefits.
Why? How come, if it was going to arbitration, how come there wasn't a consideration of all these broader issues that, again, people wanted to see change on?
Well, for one thing, because the city hadn't put them on the table. And when the union calls for arbitration, they determine what questions are going to be addressed in this binding arbitration. Mm. And they said, listen, you're not serious about talking about money. We asked for a 3.5% annual raise. You said zero. We'll give you nothing. That's not a really fruitful negotiating tactic, to come to the table with nothing. And so the police union, whose job is not to reform themselves or the department, but rather just to get the best deal possible for the members, said, hey, we've got this tool. It's called binding arbitration. We're going to use it. And this summer in July, the arbitration panel that heard the cases from the city and from the union said, we side with the union, and awarded them raises, not quite as much as the union asked for, but nonetheless raises. And now, this fall, as a result, the police union has their raises and back pay, mind you. They're all getting back pay for 2 of the 3 years they've been out of contract. And the city basically got nothing, no concessions in exchange. And
But you say the city is still in negotiation. Can the city turn and say, okay, the arbitrator gave you your raise, but in exchange for that, I want greater accountability for misconduct, or I want freedom in scheduling, or I want an expanded public database to show the charges against folks with internal affairs, that kind of thing. If the carrot is already out there, if they already have the raise, can't the city say, okay, now you have to give us something?
Well, if you have something already, if the police have gotten at least partly what they want, which is money, so they have no incentive to give anything back at this point, except for this. There's still some room. There's still some leverage for the city because there is no contract. The arbitration award that came this July that amounts to $15 million in back pay and 3.25% raises for the 2 years that they were out of contract. That's not a contract. So they have to go back to the table. And the police union still wants to know about back pay for the fiscal year that just ended in July. And they want raises going forward. So the city has some leverage, but they've lost a lot because, you know, every patrol officer just got a bump in their paycheck. I think it's coming out next week. So they're going to see, a raise in their paycheck, and pretty soon they're going to get a fat check in back pay for 2 years.
Finish your carrots and peas or you get no dessert. Well, just guess what? I already ate my dessert.
Yeah, and the thing about this, Dave, is according to conversations I had with the police union back in that summer of 2020, this is not due. The police union president, John Evans, told me that he had been a party to 3 contract negotiations in his career with the union. And he said that the Brown administration had never pushed for police reforms at those negotiating tables, that all of them had always boiled down to wages and benefits. How much money does the police union have or want? How much does the city have to give them?
But the union was the one that went to the arbitrator and said the scope of our binding arbitration here should be money alone. Are they not culpable for the small agenda too?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. But again, as you know, when back in 2020, again, we had Investigative Post analyzed the police contract and talked to a lot of labor lawyers. And there was a particularly fruitful conversation I had with a Cornell labor union labor law professor who reminded me that that it is not the job of the union to reform the police department. That is not what they exist for.
Right.
That is the job of the mayor, the administration, whoever it may be, the Brown administration, Masiello before him, Griffin before him. It's up to the administration to go in good faith to the negotiating table, in good faith, but maybe with a baseball bat in their pocket, you know?
Yeah, I hear you.
And get what they want, to get things like residency requirements, which the police department had for a while, but the Brown administration allowed to expire with the contract in 2019. Things like annual performance reviews, which the city must try to get from the police union, or they risk losing their certification, which they only got for the first time in 2019, because the state accreditation agency that gave them certification said, hey, this is a requirement, but you don't have it, but we'll waive that requirement so long as you try to get that in your next contract negotiation. Obviously, it hasn't happened yet. Other things like, you know, looking at seniority, the way that assignments are determined and promotions and things like that. Those are sacrosanct to the union. You'd have to give up a lot in order to buy concessions there. Mm-hmm. And of course, they've already given up a lot of leverage if they even wanted to touch that sacred cow.
How much of your impressions that you got from the union should be taken with a certain amount, a grain or 7 of salt?
Oh, of course.
Because obviously, if not only is it their job to get these raises, but it's their job kind of to make the union look good and make the city look like it's not doing what it's supposed to. That helps their cause.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, so you, of course, when the president of the union, John Evans, takes umbrage at the mayor portraying the union as a hurdle to reform or, you know, or unwilling to negotiate, of course, you take that with several grains of salt. But on the other hand, the evidence suggests that what he says is correct. And when we, in 2020, when we analyze the union and the history of contract changes and amendments to the contract and all of this, this evolution of the agreement over 30 years, the labor lawyers we consulted said, yeah, you know, this doesn't look like a lot of back and forth. This looks like, in fact, what happens is it always boils down to money, that these issues of how the police actually run the department, what managerial rights the commissioner has on things like discipline and the structure of the department, these things don't really seem to be frequently
addressed within the contract.
Which suggests to the people we interviewed that these have not been priorities for the Brown administration, or before that, the Masiello administration or the Griffin administration way, way back.
So there is a history here, and we can get to this in a minute. There is a history here of no reform being included in the contract, you would say.
Yeah, that's what the people we interviewed back in 2020 said. And, you know, so I guess the key point is there's plenty of blame on both sides. You know, you need a full shaker of salt when you're talking to either side of these negotiations.
Jeff Kelly is with us from the Investigative Post. His latest article there says, raises but no reforms for Buffalo Police. We're talking a little bit about that, especially in light of, again, all the calls last summer for reform of the police department. A little bit of momentum there that was moving forward, but momentum that was stymied when they got binding arbitration that gave them raises. As I said in the analogy earlier, eat your carrots and peas and you'll get dessert. They already got their dessert.
They got their dessert early, yeah.
Wow. What happens now? The city has had their leverage cut out completely from underneath them, haven't they?
Again, not completely. There are still they still have some leverage. But what both sides have told me is that they are back at the negotiating table. And on the administration side, there's a whole new team. There's been big turnover in the law department. They handle these sort of things. There's a new corporation counsel, several new lawyers working under her. And both sides, as they will publicly, expressed optimism that they will arrive at an agreement. But what besides wages and benefits that will entail is hard to say. I've been told that some of these things are on the table, restoring the residency requirement. Let me just talk about that for
a
moment.
Yeah, okay. Tell me. Because if I'm an advocate of police reform, give me the argument, so what? What does residency do?
Well, you know, there's a couple of arguments. One of them, and if you're a police reform advocate, probably the primary one, is if you live in the city, in the neighborhood that you serve as a police officer, you are more likely to forge bonds with the people you are protecting and the people you have to police.
And you could argue that it makes for a more diverse force, theoretically.
Theoretically, it makes for a more diverse force, which understands the city they're patrolling better. And, you know, there's also an economic argument. You live in the city, you shop in the city, you spend money in the city, you spend the money the city is paying you in the city where you live. And that's, you know, that's a practical reason for it. And here's the thing. So the police contract that expired in 2019 had a residency requirement. I believe it was the first one ever. And so that new hires for a while, mm-hmm. had to live in the city for a pretty substantial amount of time. Older officers were not required. So there was a little bit of awkwardness there.
And this is something that's in place for a lot of city employees. I know some teachers that deferred their retirement because they deferred their move until after retirement because while they were an active teacher, they couldn't necessarily get out of the city, but once they retired, they did.
Yeah.
This happens. This is the structure.
Yeah. So get this as an example of dysfunction. So there's this residency requirement. Great. But it expires in 2019 when the contract expires. You know, and believe me, I've been told, like, there was no real effort to negotiate a new contract before the old one expired. So it was allowed to expire, and then suddenly new hires since July 2019 have not been required to live in the city.
Weren't the people on the force at the time the contract expired subject to the terms of the old contract?
Some of the people who were hired in that spell in between, so that you have veteran officers not compelled to live in the city. A whole cadre of new hires compelled to live in the city. Then after 2019, the last 3 years, not compelled to live in the city.
Even though they were...
That is correct.
They were operating under the terms of the pre-existing but expired contract.
Correct. So, yeah.
Wait a minute.
I know. So that's the price you pay for not seriously engaging contract negotiations ahead of time.
Was it
You've
just
got
not
this
being
weird patchwork.
Was it just not being enforced? How did it turn out that it was in the contract but not happening?
Those terms of the contract expired in 2019. That's it.
Mm.
So wages stayed the same as they were, but the provisions like that were erased. So you know, those things might be on the table again. Annual performance reviews, because as we discussed, they really have to get them in there, but that's going to come at a steep price from the union. They want something in return. Also, possibly, I was told that they were discussing certification of individual officers, which is a big step, and that would require that's a big give from the union. That would require that individual officers get certified by an accreditation agency, and that certification would have to be renewed. And the value of that is you make sure that officers remain.
You could weed out some bad apples.
Yeah, they remain fit for duty. Their training is up to date. And training, that's another, also a big negotiating point. For the union, they tend to be happy to accept more training. Their interest is in how they get paid for training sessions, how that works into the schedule, is it overtime, et cetera. It's all about, again, that's for the union, that's all about money.
Yeah.
And frankly, it's all about money for the administration too.
Well, training would require a program that probably is not cheap.
That's right. That's right. You have to pay for the training and you have to pay the officers for their time.
Another item that I see you wrote about is the idea that right now the officers in internal affairs, the ones that are investigating possible wrongdoing, are actually members of the union rather than kind of more independent than that.
Yeah, that's always been a kind of a sticky wicket. And it's not just internal affairs. It's that the patrol officers, supervisors, most of them, all but 10 members of the uniformed department are members of the union. So your lieutenants, your captains, they're all union members, and they're meant to supervise and discipline their fellow union members.
Mm.
It can get a little sticky.
I imagine. Yeah. Now, I said to come back to it, talk about the history. Mayor Griffin, Mayor Mazziello, Mayor Brown, you looked into the contracts under all of them and found really that this, can I call it a disinterest, isn't new.
Yeah, that's right. And that's what police tell me as well. And, you know, just last week I was talking to a patrol officer who said, and I was asking him about the raises forthcoming, and he said, yeah, you know, this is how it always works. We always go to arbitration and we get a raise through arbitration and nothing changes. He said, and it's fine by me.
Well, of course. Yeah. I picture that.
Right.
Talk to me about what happens next. You say some of the negotiations are already underway?
That's what I've been told. I'm not sure exactly the negotiating schedule, but I understand that this month they intended to sit back down at the table. I don't know if that... I think that probably was dependent upon the Common Council approving this arbitration, or rather the release of money to pay this arbitration award, which they did last week.
I want to go back to the quote you had earlier with Darius Pridgen basically saying No one has told us, oh no, this is not Pridgen, this is Rivera. No one has told us anything. I was just talking to the Finance Committee Chair Wyatt yesterday. He hadn't heard about it either. Is the council even part of this process?
They're really not, except in as much as they have to sign off on the paying out of the award that it has to go to. But yeah, when I called Dave Rivera for a comment on the story, he was surprised to learn that 2 months earlier there had been an arbitration award that was going to cost the city millions of dollars. And he, who chairs the police advisory board,
he himself a former, he's not even former. He's a police officer on leave to be on the council.
He's a retired detective sergeant.
Okay.
And he chairs the police oversight committee, and he didn't know. And in fact, the Brown administration did not submit the necessary items to the council until the day our story published, and at that point it went through the process and got approved last week.
Can the council push reform into a contract, or is that just primarily the law department, the administration?
It's pretty much the law department. I mean, they can try to use, so they hold the purse strings, right? So they can try to use that.
We will not approve this amount of money unless A, B, and C are in there.
Right.
Theoretically.
Right. But on the other hand, that becomes tricky because this is a binding arbitration award. So the police union can and has gone to court to get an affirmation that the city must pay this out. The binding arbitration.
So the council has a bit of a gun to their head, too.
It overrules all. Okay. The arbitration award overrules all.
I ask this question almost at the end of every interview, and I know you're a neutral journalist, so it might not be as appropriate as it is in other settings, but are you optimistic? Let me rephrase it. Let me ask it differently. Do you picture progress and change coming or not?
I think that if we're talking strictly about this process, this contract negotiation, I think that probably the union will concede some of these things, like the performance review, perhaps even the residency requirement, and the city will probably be compelled to, in exchange, give similar raises as they've given for the previous 2 years in out years. So I don't think you'll see serious reform to disciplinary procedures. I don't think you'll see new transparency measures, and I don't think you will see nobody's going to touch the seniority system.
And none of that can happen independently outside of the contract.
Correct. Correct.
So once they push away from that dinner table, the dessert's been consumed.
I will say that there are opinions out there that say the disciplinary procedures can be addressed outside the contract, but the city of Buffalo has never shown any willingness to push that envelope, to challenge those protections in court.
All right. Jeff Kelly, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Jeff Kelly is a reporter for Investigative Post. You can read his article at investigativepost.org. Stay with us. When we come back from the break, we'll look at a meeting tonight to try and figure out what to do with the mementos and stories and other parts of the history of May 14th.